Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to share quality information, always original every day, I don't repeat any of this, on how you can live a longer and healthier and happier life. Also trying in the body of our program to bring guests or commentaries to the fore so you can look at a deeper level, not superficial, not ideological, not political, not biased. That's what we're about. For example, today we're going to talk about curry, vitamin E, also losing a parent early in life, energy drinks, and online cognitive training. And all this comes from the National Library of Medicine, from the peer-reviewed literature. For example, from the National University of Singapore, an article published in Geroscience, the official journal of the American Aging Association, reported the finding of longer life among consumers of curry. Yeah, the curry, the powder. The yellowish, wonderful, aromatic powder. But in that curry, you also have what is called curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N. And that turns off inflammation. That's a part of the turmeric from which curry derives. So why not have more curry dishes? It really sparks up almost any dish. And that's what this science shows. In 4,551 men and women, 55 years and older, who are members of two combined Singapore longitudinal aging studies. And they measured their curry intake as either rare, never, or all the time. And they found that those who take curry on a daily basis during a 12-year follow-up period had 38% lower risk of experiencing common diseases and death. In fact, all-cause mortality, meaning dying from anything, cancer, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, if you took curry on a regular daily basis, you were 39% less likely to die during that follow-up period. That's terrific. For one item, you bet. Now, from Mahado University in Thailand, the effects of vitamin E supplementation on chronic insomnia disorder in postmenopausal women, this was a prospective double-blind randomized controlled trial. And let's face it, chronic insomnia is a major disorder, and especially for postmenopausal women. And it's frequently underdiagnosed and improperly treated. So this double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trial was conducted to evaluate the potential of vitamin E to treat chronic insomnia as an alternative to sedative drugs and hormone therapy, which are dangerous. And what they found was by taking vitamin E every day, and not even a high dose, that could make a substantial difference in your ability to have a quality sleep. So why not take vitamin E in the early evening, 4, 5, 6 o'clock? That's when you should take your evening vitamins in any case, not later than that. From the University of Michigan, losing a parent early in life impacts a person's immune system as they age. What's this mean? Well, according to the University of Michigan, when a person loses a parent or a caregiver at a young age, their immune system suffers later in life. And that's unfortunate. This was published in PLOS ONE. So just means that a child's immune function is going to be negatively impacted in later life. And so that's what they found. So shouldn't we be having some form of counseling services provided to people who lose a parent in early life, to help them through that? Because otherwise what they're finding is that the four indicators of immune function in later life, including C-reactive protein, interleukin-6, soluble tumor necrosis factor, and cytomegalovirus immunoglobulin G, were all affected in a negative way because of early life trauma that was locked into their epigenetics. So even if they don't think about it, it's still in the cells. and the cells react to it. I believe regressive hypnosis would be terrific for them. From Camilo Jose Cela, University in Spain, energy drinks cause insomnia, nervousness in athletes. A study analyzing the positive and negative effects of energy drinks on athletes has seen that although in principle their sports performance was seen to improve by 3%, there was also an increase in the frequency of insomnia, nervousness, and the level of stimulation in the hours following competition. Well, hello, that's your caffeine, and that's not good. And you don't want to be walking around with an elevated blood sugar level. That's not healthy. And also, you'll exhaust your adrenal glands. So you got to pay attention to these things. So you don't need artificial energy drinks. Acai and brain health is the basis of a study from Adelaide University in Australia. And what they found was that this simple Amazonian fruit is neuroprotective. It unlocks its healing potential and helps your brain. So what they're saying is that the potential brain health benefits may be linked to an inhibition of the aggregation of beta amyloid proteins. That's in this new study. And the buildup of plaque from beta amyloid deposits is associated with increase in brain cell damage and death from oxidative stress. So this is related to a loss of cognitive function and increased risk of dementia and Alzheimer's. The most common form of dementia is Alzheimer's. And finally, from King's College London, a study done at the Institute of Psychiatry, Psychology, and Neuroscience at King's College and the University of Southampton, they found that online cognitive training not effective in reducing ADHD symptoms. That's according to a major review. So, better ways to help ADHD? How about changing the diet to a healthy living plant foods diet? How about supplementing with probiotics to help rebalance the gut microbiome? How about giving a good B complex with ADHD influencing vitamin B12 and folic acid, methylated in both forms at 1 milligram? That makes a difference. Get them off the cell phones. Get them off being up close to Wi-Fi and electromagnetic pulses. Get them to have melatonin in the evening so they can have a good night's sleep. Clean up their diet. Get rid of the caffeine. Improvement in ADHD. You bet. That's it on Health and Healing. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us.
And welcome back, everyone. We were just having a technical glitch here, so I switched over to our telephone. That means that I'm going to hold off today introducing a five-part series on 5G. Over the years, Richard Gale and I have written probably around 15, more or less, major articles. These are partly lay articles, but they're more often for the scientists, physicians, public health people to understand how dangerous 5G is. And we've done an enormous amount of research. In fact, we have a research editor helping on this named Katie, and we have a lot of brand new information to bring you. I mean brand new information, because we can no longer look at just 5G. We have to look at 6, 7, 8, and 9G. You were sold a package of information. You were propagandized. You were only sold that it's convenient, the Internet of all things, but you didn't ask if there were any harmful side effects. Nor did the media raise that question, nor did anyone in Congress raise that question. We have. And we have thousands of references to show you why you were, once again, played. But that'll be tomorrow, because I'm going to get in a new microphone. This one I've been using a few for 26 years, and it seems to be on its last legs. So what we're going to do today is I'm going to start by sharing some insights of brand new information, information you're not aware of. And it starts with an article in USA Today. Quote, Joe Rogan, RFK, don't get it. Vaccine science isn't up for debate. Oh, really? So it's settled. Settled by whom? A small consensus of people who manufacture the vaccines and those who benefit from the science? So let's just share something that they're not telling you in this USA Today article, nor anywhere else. But these are things that are important that you do know, and these are brand new to you. Quote, this is from Jack Elbaum. New emails show COVID vaccine mandates were based on a lie. Quote, it is not uncommon for politicians or bureaucrats to lie. What seems to be unique, though, is just how common and consequential the lies were during the COVID pandemic. On Monday, we got a bombshell. New documents indicate the entire justification for vaccine mandates was based upon a falsehood and that public health officials knew it. Now, understand what we're saying now. By them knowing this, this is the basis for litigation because they're protected. You can't just sue the government or any of its agents unless they do something that breaks the law. And in this case, they did. They knew this. They had malice aforethought, and they allowed the public, the world public, to be exposed to this on the largest scale of a public health measure in world history. Quote, emails obtained through a Freedom of Information Act request show that CDC Director Rochelle Walensky and former NIH Director Francis Collins were aware of and discussed, quote, breakthrough cases, end quote, of COVID in January of 2021, right when the vaccines became widely available. In her email, Walensky says that, quote, clearly, it is an important area of study, end quote. And that links to a study raising the issue and assurances the person she is sending it to, Dr. Anthony Fauci, is looped into these conversations. Okay? So what does this mean in lay language? The public, however, was told a different story. Walensky was saying something quite different. 2 months after discussing this data, she said vaccinated people, quote, don't carry the virus and don't get sick, end quote, in a congressional hearing under oath. After it became clear people were able to get infected with COVID, even after receiving the vaccine, she defended her original statements by claiming it was true at the time, she said, namely for the strands we were dealing with in early 2021. We now know that that was not true and that Walensky herself knew it was not true. We have the emails. Dr. Jay Budharda, a professor of medicine an epidemiology at Stanford School of Medicine, called the revelation, quote, stunning. He pointed out that despite this knowledge, quote, they continue to push vax mandates anyway. Now, this is a real scandal, as there is little harm in getting something like this wrong in a vacuum, a theoretical discussion. Okay, we thought that once you got vaccinated, it would prevent infection of the virus. But lo and behold, here are these breakthrough cases where people who are vaccinated are getting the virus. Okay, let's not put this out to the public, because then a lot of people are going to trust us and believe that if they get vaccinated, they won't get infected. They knew that, and this proves it. These people should be put on trial. A special prosecutor should be brought in, and this should be under congressional hearings. Now, she lied several times before Congress. Now, I'm hopeful that this is going to bring her right back in this week, because now we've got hard evidence. She knew, Collins knew, Fauci knew, and they all lied. And they put people's lives at risk. So, USA Today, what kind of reporting do you do, except for official reporting, when you don't find this information? All right? If the vaccine stopped COVID dead in its tracks, as Fauci explains, the president explains, as Walensky explains, as Rachel Maddow explains, then the decision to institute a vaccine mandate would merely be a controversial yet ultimately legitimate public health measure. The fact it did not do that, but rather had primarily personal benefits, completely removes the justification for mandates. The Biden administration tried to impose a vaccine mandate on employees. Millions of people were affected. Thousands were fired from their jobs. Businesses closed. Yet a small business, the virus evidently could go through the air and infect the people in anything, but couldn't infect people in a liquor store. That was unusual. That's a scientific first. So live in a liquor store in the back room. You won't get infected. A small health food store, yeah, got to close them. Restaurants got to close them. But, you know, you can eat all the food you want at Walmart and Sam's Club and all the big places. That's interesting. So you could have 500 people in a Whole Foods, and they're not going to get infected. Wow. Everything you were told turns out to be a lie. So they imposed this, and they knew in advance that it was all a lie. So push back on Newsweek. Why not try doing some honest, legitimate reporting? That's one thing. That's new today, okay? Their whole house of cards is imploding. But there's something even worse, and I go back to my programs. I did 147 programs on COVID. I published over 28 articles on COVID. The very first articles ever published in the United States on any media were from my radio show. I did the first broadcast challenging the inconsistencies in the science. The real scientists, for those of us like myself who are real scientists and are not for hire, we're not whored out. But all these others, you bet. You pay them the money and watch how quickly they comply with the official mandate philosophy. But there, across the world, there were scientists and physicians saying, this isn't right. They were correct. But I also gave you the articles to keep you healthy if you were infected. Remember those articles? Did you use them? Did you protect yourself? Because a lot of people didn't have the advantage of knowing they even existed. And that information came from the Library of Medicine. But I also gave you an article, and I broadcast a whole program on the National Health Services in Great Britain. They were killing patients, and they were using a special tranquilizer that's only used when a person's accepted end-of-life termination. Quote, the National Health Service whistleblower, quote, we were ordered to euthanize patients to falsely increase COVID death counts while hospitals were empty, end quote. Quote, a National Health Service whistleblower who wishes to remain anonymous has come forward with allegations that the National Health Services hospitals were not overwhelmed during the COVID-19 pandemic as was reported by authorities in the mainstream media. The whistleblower also confirmed that the little care given throughout the pandemic amounted to negligence and that the government and the National Health Service bosses essentially instructed staff to let people die or in some cases kill them through the end-of-life care program and falsely label the death as being due to COVID-19. The individual referred to as Dr. John has worked in minor injuries and illness centers as well as in primary care throughout the pandemic. Dr. John claims he has, quote, seen this mess evolve from the very beginning of the pandemic, end quote, and that hospitals were actually extremely quiet and almost empty during the first lockdown. Quote, I used to see an average of 20 patients per day. That dropped to one or two patients during the first lockdown. I have even witnessed an elderly lady with horrific broken bones come into the hospital 3 weeks after her accident as she was too scared of catching coronavirus to visit the hospital sooner. In the end, the pain overcame the fear. Quote, I have also assessed people with chest pains in their homes who would not go any further in assessment as they were so scared of, quote, the virus, they would rather chance a heart attack than the infection or the loneliness of going to the hospital alone. And then it goes through all the statistics and the data. Okay, so now let's see if there's a congressional or if there's a parliamentary hearing where this person is allowed to testify and provide the evidence, and then also give indemnification to any other whistleblowers that come forward. All right? Something that we're not told. But the worst of all is yet to come. Of all the deaths and injuries that we have seen and have been recorded, there's yet a big count still to happen. Why? Because you will see in upcoming discussions you will see that the self-organizing lipid particles that form these rubber band-like structures that block arteries and veins, that those take time. It depends upon how many vaccines you have. The more vaccines you have, the more likely they are for these to develop, and the more likely they are to die. So then there was someone who was not in medicine, but he is in a place to judge medical outcomes because he was working with insurance actuaries. We've had him on the program a couple of times, Ed Dowd. Now, understand what you're about to hear is factual, and yet not a single major news outlet will discuss it, nor have him on to discuss it, nor have Dr. Bhattacharya or others on to discuss it, and that is the suddenly unexpected death exceeding what would normally occur, including those deaths from COVID. Very few deaths from COVID now. But there's a big jump. Up to 40% of excess deaths are occurring. That's hundreds of thousands of people in the United States per year are dying. Are these old people in their 70s and 80s with comorbidities like emphysema from smoking or heart disease or high blood pressure, obesity? No. These are young people. Young people in their 20s and 30s and 40s. And they're not with comorbidities. Well, since when did this happen? Now, listen carefully what he's going to tell you. For anyone with a mathematical background in this audience, you'll know exactly what he is saying. He's giving you figures that we've never seen before in the history of this country about proportionality. In other words, what would be the odds of this happening in a given year and then going forward into the next year and then the next year? And it's a number that is virtually never used because it never happens, but now it's happening regularly. So we have this epidemic of injuries, permanent injuries and deaths due to the vaccines, because that's the only mitigating factor, nothing else. They went clear back to 2015 and measured every death from the insurance actuaries right up. And what did all these young people have in common? They wanted to keep their jobs. Therefore, they had to keep getting mandated vaccines. So what have we also seen concomitant with that and concurrent? We've seen two things. We've seen young athletes, the prime of life, healthy as you can possibly get, dropping dead. Not just a few, all across the globe, and some in full view of public viewing. And that has never happened before with these young top athletes, and you see it all the time now. So here's the clip. Listen carefully to what I'm saying, and especially Newsweek, because you should have been on top of this. You should have allowed some reporting on this. You should have invited Ed Dowd to your offices or done a Zoom and challenged him. Say, we say that the vaccine science is safe and effective, and we support that, And by the way, our advertising, how much of our advertising comes from Big Pharma? State that also. And how much funding have you received from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation? And state that also, Newsweek. And let's see you have this debate with Ed Dowd. He'll debate you. He has a group of PhD economists who have gone over these figures. He hasn't been wrong about anything he said. He's been right. You haven't been, nor is anyone else in the mainstream media. Guess who also has this information as of this morning, because we sent it to him? Robert Kennedy Jr. Guess who you can't compromise? Robert Kennedy Jr. Who's his campaign manager? Dennis Kucinich. Yeah, we made sure that he got it also. And he's going to get the new report on 5G, in part because when he was being interviewed by Joe Rogan, he had a really straight-on answers, and he was accurate. Remember, he has dozens of attorneys working for him right now and fact-checkers, hundreds of people. And yet when it came to Joe asking him about 5G and, you know, COVID or anything else, he stumbled. He didn't have his facts. So we're presenting the most comprehensive, in-depth scholarship article on 5G, 4G, 3, 2, and 1G, and 6, 7, 8, and 9G ever written There's no place in science you can go to find something that's comprehensive. It is not for the lay language person. It's meant to be used in a court of law. It's time that we began the lawsuits. Let's go to the clip. This is Ed Dowd talking about the alarming rise in sudden deaths that not a single major media has been willing to address.
Let's actually just highlight that quickly, because from a data guy, when you see two different countries separated by an ocean that have a lot of fundamental differences, even though they're both G7, and you see a similar number of standard deviations like that, how does that make you feel?
Oh, I first of all, for those in the audience who don't understand what standard deviation is, it's a probability distribution curve, and a three standard deviation event is what we call a tail event, and it happens 0.03% of the time. And on Wall Street, that's a big deal. Three. All you need is three, and guys on Wall Street start to worry. Well, this absence and work time lost is 12 and 13 standard deviations in the UK and US in 2022. That's a black swan event. I mean, that just boggles the mind. This deviation from trend just and happening in both countries simultaneously is a signal. And again, using deductive reasoning and simple logic, this trend started in 2021 and accelerated in 2022. So you have to ask yourself, what changed in 2021? Well, mass vaccination programs and mandates in the U.S. So unless someone has a better explanation, it needs to be investigated, but it doesn't seem to be even acknowledged, or that statistic even being talked about by the governments. I mean, the numbers are just there in the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics and the U.K. ONS data. It's just there.
And so while we're here, and for people that might not know the entire background, do you want to talk about the excess deaths and the way that you've tracked this and what the book is really about, and the cost of the economy? I think you had made it an estimated $147 billion in damage, and just kind of those assertions, because I think those missing work numbers, they kind of roll off of that from your research.
Yeah, correct. So, the journey I began was just following some trends, and some of the earliest trends were excess deaths. They started showing up in the insurance company results in 2021, funeral home results, meaning funeral home companies were beating and raising earnings. And while the management teams were expecting, they were legitimately expecting after the first wave of COVID to go back to normal trend, but it didn't. And they started to become growth companies, which again, we should be asking ourselves, why are funeral home companies growth stocks again? So those two trends led me to other databases like the CDC, the Society of Actuaries. And what we found is there was a mix shift from old to young. So during 2020, there were excess deaths, but they're mostly old. It became established fact that COVID mostly affected older folks with comorbidities. Well, then suddenly in 2021, excess deaths took off, especially in the working population, more so than the general population. And that was proven in my book. And it's continued to this day. The Society of Actuaries just released their 2022 report, and young folks are continuing to die in their group life business in the millennial age group, 12% more than the general U.S. population. So again, whatever's happening is affecting the working folks in all countries across the Western nations. So that's something that needs to be investigated. It's not normal, and it's flipped. It's a relationship that it never held before. In fact, the Society of Actuaries had proven in a study in 2016, which I QR code in my book, that their business is a good business. They determined that group life policyholders die normally at one-third the rate of the general U.S. population in any given year, and that all flipped in 2021. There was an 8% differential, 40% excess deaths between 25 and 64 in group life versus 32% in the general U.S. population in 2021. So excess deaths have come down since then, but they're still high for the working folks, and that continues. We're running now between 15 and 20% excess deaths across all Western nations right now.
That's extremely high.
10% is a once in a 200-year flood, according to Scott Davison at One America. He said that in January of 2022. So statistically, 10% is crazy. That's three standard deviations. 40% is off the charts. That's what happened in 21. And 20% is an abomination. And unfortunately, the trend into 2023 doesn't seem to be normalizing yet. It's still running quite high, especially in group life. And group life for me is the smoking gun, because these are the people that work at the Fortune 500, mid-sized companies.
Okay. Back to my microphone. Now, this is not discussed anywhere. These are responsible and reasonable people. They had their statistics. They want to come on national programs and discuss it or debate it in a civil manner. And now we're right back to where Newsweek said, and everyone else in the mainstream media wants to protect Dr. Hotez and say it's been settled. It hasn't been settled at all. To the contrary, the only thing that's been settled is that these vaccines have now been proven absolutely unequivocally by the manufacturer's own data that they tried to hide and wanted a 75-year moratorium before anybody could look at the data, when you'd all be dead, or most of you'd be dead, and it would have been out of the consciousness. Why weren't they transparent right up front? Why is no one in the media willing to address this? Because they're afraid of the outcome. Since everything else they've been saying has been lies, they would show that they were the major perpetrators of lies. Howard Stern and Jimmy Kimmel and all the rest of these individuals were promoting a policy that could lead to damage and death. Are they going to take responsibility for that? I hope in court they're shown to be responsible. So that's coming at you. Now, how do we get so many young people believing that woke was right, critical race theory is right, identity politics is right, and that's the only thing they're willing to tolerate? If you say anything else, immediately they're screaming, yelling, punching, kicking. Why? How did we get here where you cannot have a civil conversation? Well, it starts in universities and colleges. Here is a whistleblower talking about her experience at Antioch University. All right, let's hear what she has to say.
Hi, my name is Leslie, and I would like to share with you my experiences in the clinical mental health counseling program at Antioch University and my concerns that graduates of this program may be unprepared to serve their clients as counselors based on the training that they've received. Counselors are being trained not to remain objective and neutral with their clients, but rather to see themselves as agents of social change and to view their clients as opportunities for imprinting extreme left-wing views. And I say this as someone who's always considered myself to be socially and politically liberal. Antioch has almost entirely replaced classical notions of education and psychology with social justice ideology. I'll give you some examples of how that plays out in counselor training. We were taught that our main role as counselors is not in our work with clients, individuals, and families, but rather as activists for social justice. We were taught to assess ourselves and our clients according to something called the addressing model. This uses the word addressing as an acronym, with each letter standing for a different demographic category. So age, disability, ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation, nationality, gender identity, socioeconomic status, et cetera. And for each of these categories, we are to give ourselves either a value of marginalized or privileged and do the same for our clients. And then add these up and see who's more privileged. And this teaches you how you're supposed to interact with your client. And if one of you is white and the other is not, then automatically that's the trump card. And so the non-white person is the marginalized person, no matter what the other categories say. And this sounds absolutely crazy, but this is actually what they are teaching in a graduate level clinical applied psychology program to future counselors. This is how you are to understand yourself and the person to whom you are speaking. We were taught to broach race early in the clinical relationship, preferably within the first session. And what that means is that no matter what the client is coming in for, could be relationship issues, depression, bereavement, any number of things that a person might come in to see a counselor for, you are to bring that conversation around to race. And if the person, you say you're a Black person and you're coming in, I'm supposed to say to you, how does it feel to you, a Black person, to sit with me, a white person, as your counselor? And then if it doesn't seem like it's a big deal to you, and it doesn't seem like race has been playing a big role in the issues that you're facing, I'm supposed to help increase, this is what we were told, increase your racial identity salience, which means making you more aware of how race, white supremacy, and systemic racism has impacted the problems that you're having today. And if you're a white person, I'm supposed to help you see how you have been perpetrating white supremacy knowingly and unknowingly against people of color, instead of helping you work on the problems that you are bringing in, or it in order to steer your problems into a racial discussion. I had a professor at Antioch for a multicultural perspectives class, which was basically a social justice training class, who called white women basic bitches, Beckies, and nothing special, and told us that white women's tears have been overvalued. Antioch also promotes racial segregation among students, frequently inviting us to join either a BIPOC affinity group or a white affinity group. The white group used to be called an accountability group, but they've changed that language. They've softened it a little, I guess. They also are promoting language which would change the word woman, replace the word woman with the term AFAB, people with vulvas. AFAB stands for assigned female at birth. So instead of woman, AFAB, people with vulvas. They promote the concept of the trans child as well, which means that according to Antioch's teachings, children can know from very early in life that they are transgender, and that as a counselor, it's your job to affirm and help them on their path to physical alterations of their bodies, not to explore with them what's going on and why they feel the way that they do, and help them to become comfortable with their physical body without drugs and surgeries. The Chancellor of Antioch also sends out frequent emails in response to social current events in politics and culture. And these are editorials. Most recent one was about renaming Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. And these emails tell us in really strong language how we are supposed to feel and respond and act in response to these events. There's no attempt at neutrality. There's no attempt at remaining politically objective. These are left-wing political talking points, and it seems to me so highly inappropriate that this person uses their access to the entire student body worth of emails to spread their political points across, you know, far and wide. It's like a bullhorn. And I've responded to these, and I get dismissals. I have reached out to my faculty advisor about my concerns about the program. I've reached out to the chair of the department. I have filed grievances with the provost. All of my concerns are being dismissed. Most recently, the faculty advisor admitted to me that they are aware that they are not training counselors who are going to be able to work with, in her words, the Trump supporter. So this is turning counseling into a profession that seeks to remake you, the client, in one political ideological form and pathologize alternative ways of thinking and sociocultural political viewpoints. I have almost finished this degree. I only have a few classes left to take, and I'm finding myself kind of at a stopping point right now because they've instituted a civility pledge, which is a pledge to social justice ideology. It's being aware of racism, ableism, heterosexism, et cetera, and privileged and marginalized identities. I cannot sign this pledge. I do not agree with this ideology. I will not sign this pledge just because they have my master's degree held hostage. I hope that people are starting to become aware of just how significant this cultural takeover is, this divisive and hateful ideology. This is the implications for mental health care, for people seeking mental health services, for people going to college or sending their kids to school are huge. I really hope people will take this seriously and let's put a stop to this nonsense. Let's bring back sanity.
Well, that's certainly something that the colleges and universities, many of whom are indoctrinating young children, young people. And where is the ability to teach critical thinking? It still exists. It's not 100% captured yet, the university system, but it's well on its way. And where do you think these graduates go? I'm going to play a clip now from someone that I used to take strong umbrage with, Carrie Smith. She was a leading voice within the feminist movement, but she went way, way radical. She was successful. When you're in that loop, you're going to be successful because everybody supports one another. And as long as you keep your ideology pure, meaning if it's pure hate, you don't question what you're hating, whom you're hating, and what the consequences are for that hate. If you want to destroy someone's reputation, mind you, turns out in one of these interviews, she's actually an editor at Wikipedia. And I've told you a long time ago, I've done over 75 articles on Wikipedia, and they're all accurate. We need our legislators to strip away the 230 clause that protects Wikipedia. We need them to go out of business. We need to walk away from all these corporate platforms. Why do you think I am not on Facebook or Twitter or any of these other places? I'm not. Because they're all crap. If you have a brain, use it. If you don't, I guess then you'll use their Google search engines for all that is truthful, none of which would I trust. Here she is, because she left that woke group. And now she's talking about how universities brainwash students to become SJWs. This is Zuby interviewing Carrie Smith.
What did you actually learn in that women's studies course? Like you said that university is where you got indoctrinated in your own words, but like, what did they actually teach you?
So I took, as part of the women's studies minor, I also took critical race classes. I took queer theory classes because this is all interconnected. It's all part of one ideology. What they taught me to do was that the best way to view the world and to interpret everything in the world is through a filter of everything is racist or sexist or homophobic or transphobic. And so you've got to look for it and be able to find out where it is. So like I took a class on women and religion, and the class starts from a conclusion. The conclusion is that the Bible is sexist. Now we will take the Bible apart and prove our conclusion. But you start from a place of conclusion. And so what they're doing is teaching you that that the only way, the best way and the only way to look at the world is as a competition between identity groups. Mm. And that you can't be, they hate when people say they're colorblind, or they hate when people say they don't treat people differently because of race and sex. This is why they try to convince us all that we all have implicit bias, because they're like, no, none of us are colorblind.
Sounds like an alt-right training camp.
It's totally.
That's why it's so funny, because I'm like, it's the same thing.
It is the same thing. Yeah, we have to, the most important thing I can do when I meet you, this is what they teach you, is to look at what race you are and what sex you are and treat you differently because of it. And that's actually what they did. I mean, I read a lot of, we read a lot of like, postmodernist writers. We read a lot of, see, I didn't realize that what I was learning was a form of Marxism. Mm. And I didn't know, you know why? Because I didn't have enough context from school And I went to a science and math school. I went to a school that you had that I had to apply to get into. It was free. It was the state paid for it. But for 11th and 12th grade, it was supposed to be for the best and brightest in my state. And you go and live there. It's a residential high school. And I didn't have, and I had a great history teacher there, but I didn't have the historical context to know anything about Marxism or communism or socialism.
No, they ignore that. They'll teach all the Nazi stuff and the Holocaust and everything like that. But communism, Soviet Union, Cambodia, any of that stuff, it not a peep.
And why is that? Because I think there's a reason why they don't teach it.
I think there's a couple reasons. I think the one of the most obvious ones is that in the Second World War, both the UK and USA at some point allied with the Soviet Union. So even at that point in World War, like, there was a lot of hush-hush about the bad stuff that was happening in the Soviet Union. It was presented to the population of the UK and the USA in more of a positive light. And so the horrors of the Holocaust and of Nazi Germany, Nazi Germany was the enemy, right, of both the UK, all the allies. So that was fine. Whereas the Soviet Union helped eventually to defeat Hitler. So the way that, you know, how they say history is written by the victors. So mm-hmm. in some ways that, you know, one of those ideologies and leaders is presented in a certain way and demonized as Hitler and Nazis should be. But most people aren't even aware of the fact that more people died under communism than under Nazism, right? And I didn't know this myself until my early 20s when I actually went and like read up on some of this stuff. And I was just like, whoa, how did I make it all the way through university without even being aware of all this stuff? And then, you know, they had the Soviet Union, then you had, you know, Cambodia, you had Cuba, where else has this been done? You know, it's like this has happened. So I think that's the main factor. I think that's the main reason. And then I think the second one is just obviously academia has a huge leftist bias. So they want to show the evils of far-right ideology, but because far-left ideology is closer to a lot of teachers and lecturers and stuff, whether or not they'd admit it, because it's kind of closer to them, I don't think they want to share it in the same way.
I saw a stat there that said, I think it was like 30%. It was pretty high, something pretty high. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me, but it was a large percentage of university professors in the humanities who self-identified as Marxists. And that's just the ones who are not afraid to say they are.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think you're right. I think I didn't learn. You say you learned in your early 20s. God bless you. I didn't learn until my late 30s. Like I feel like I'm trying to download all these, you know, a bunch of history and philosophy and just things that I shut myself off to because of this ideology. It's like an intellectual prison. I've described it this way before, but it really is. You kind of lock yourself, you lock your curiosity away. You're not actually thinking. You're sorting through information. You're sorting through tenets of the belief system, and you're trying to pick the correct things to say. You're not actually thinking. And so to leave that has just been like,
it's
amazing.
How did you manage to stay in that bubble for so long?
That's a good question. A large part of it was online. It definitely was, because I started after college, I started frequenting a lot of feminist message boards. Mm-hmm. There was one called Chick Click, which doesn't exist anymore, but it was supposed to be just a message board for ladies, but me and some other feminist SJWs took it over and started, I was preaching. We were converting people. Oh, I was speaking the good word. This is like 20 years ago. I was teaching people about, look, hey, racism equals prejudice plus power. Okay.
Oh gosh. You know? You're one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Sexism equals prejudice plus power. And I was like lecturing people on all this stuff that has now become mainstream. Back then people thought it was wacky, but we converted an entire board pretty much.
Interesting.
And I have printouts. Actually, Carter and I were joking. We should start giving people some of my embarrassing SJW, because of course I saved it because I thought this was all brilliant thoughts that I had.
Okay. Oh, glad you still have it.
Yeah, it's so embarrassing. It's like cringe. Wow. After that, the message board, just like with social media, you can, you know, I'm sure you know this, I'm just repeating what people know, but you can really severely limit what you're exposed to. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. I had a carefully cultivated echo chamber of people in entertainment, which I worked in, and people in activism. I was really skilled at
less than 2 minutes
working with nonprofits in SJW nonprofits to promote my clients. So I would have we would have comedians doing stuff for the nonprofits, and nonprofits then pushing the comedians when they were on tour or what have you, or when they're on a TV show. So my whole world was like professional SJWs. It wasn't the traditional entertainment world. It was more, I would say, SJW journalists and activists. And those are the people I worked with to push my clients. And so that's all I really saw. And if somebody had a differing opinion, like I had opinions about, I'm sure this is no shocker to people who have certain ideas about what SJWs are like, but I had opinions about people I had never actually checked out.
Yeah.
Like I thought Steven Crowder was just a raging bigot, you know? And I don't think I'd ever watched anything. Like Ben Shapiro is the devil, right? Oh, you know, wow. Like, because they don't ever give you the source material. They tell you what to think. Mm. You're reading things from Media Matters. You're reading things that from Huffington Post that are saying, basically like, here's what to think about Ben Shapiro. But that's what they're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's something he said, and we're not going to give you the clip, the link to the video so you can watch it yourself. We're going to tell you what to think about it, so you feel like you've watched it and you're informed now, and you can go argue about something that you've never taken the time to investigate on your own.
Yeah.
So that's what that world is like.
That's fascinating.
Okay. All right. We're out of time for our WBAI dance, so we're going to say goodbye so you can go to the news, and we're going to continue, and everyone else can listen on prn.live. And we're continuing now. We have Luann on the line, and we have, I believe, in studio.
Yeah, no, we don't.
We don't have the testimonials. Okay. But we have Luann on the line, and she would like to bring you up to date on a couple of things.
We don't have Luann on the line.
Oh, we don't have Luann on the line. All right. Well, I spoke to her earlier today, and here's what she would have said had she called in. We have a health retreat coming up, which is a fundraiser for our sister station, WBAI, for 1 or 2 weeks. You can come for 1 week or two in the middle of September. And we're putting the announcement out early because we're always packed. Now, there's even when we're packed, there are people at last moment can't come for whatever reason.
Luann,
and then there's a backup list.
Gary, Luann just called.
And so if you want to come, here's what you can reasonably expect. To have your thoughts challenged. To have everything you've ever believed in challenged. Because that's what I'm here for. Not to tell you what to believe. I don't do that. And if anyone's ever come to any of my lectures, and I've done thousands and thousands and thousands of lectures, I always give some points of reference to spend a day thinking about these 10 points. Generally, now it's 10 points per day. What is the central meaning of your life? What trade-offs have you given? Last night with our anti-Asian group that's doing it from home, our control group, I spent about 40 minutes talking about the power of trade-offs. Because everything in life is a trade-off. Where you live is a trade-off versus where you ideally should live. The job you have versus the ideal career you want. The relationship you're in. Is it satisfying you? Is it harmonious? Is it constructive, creative, passionate, or not? So all these things we choose in life, we have to ask, what did we trade off in order to have this? I'm hungry. I want something now. I want something sweet. Maybe I'll have and then fill in the blank. Okay, that's a trade-off, because part of you could say, I'm hungry, I'm going to eat something that honors my body. Well, when you start getting into patterns of behavior, the more trade-offs you engage in to the maladaptation of your personality, the worse it gets for you, not better. So my role at the retreats is to encourage people to look within themselves, to learn to laugh at themselves. I use a lot of humor. Always extemporaneous and spontaneous, and also to realize what we are as human beings, And we're sacred, if you choose to be sacred. But that's a conditioned response. Are we born nice, wonderful, loving, caring, nurturing to others? We're not. Are we born greedy and selfish? Or are these conditioned responses to our upbringing? And then we go through this to see, how do we end up being the person we are? What happens when you wake up one day and you see so many things going wrong and you choose not to address any of them? Is someone else supposed to fight that battle for you? And if so, why? Are you even acknowledging that you're a coward? No. No one acknowledges they're a coward. Well, then why aren't they addressing any of the injustices in this world of which there are no shortage to choose from? So that's why we have to look deeper, and that's why I want to take people into deep dives. Now, that's what I do. But then we had in the last retreat, we had Mitchell Raven doing workshops for the regular people, not the anti-aging, and taking people on the exchange of energy, Qigong, healing energy. We had Dr. Peter Resnick also dealing with depression and anxiety disorders, which a lot of people suffer from. Even functional people still have these mood swings and loneliness. Why are we lonely? Well, that gets back to what I do, is if you're feeling something, go back not to the symptom, but go back to the cause. And what would you normally eat in a day? Well, there you don't have any choice. You eat healthy, dynamic food, beautifully prepared by a wonderful group of people, including our chef who works at four Michelin-rated restaurants. He's the best of the best. And the staff that's in there, Pat and the other people, just doing a great job. And historically, we had Connie and a whole other group. And this time, they couldn't make it. But you're getting the best food, then juices and meditations and the healing hut and with the butterflies, the aromatherapy and the meditation music and the swans and the donkeys and the peacocks. And Luann brought over her ducks that everybody enjoyed, you know, holding and petting ducks, little baby ducks. That time they're full grown now. And just quiet time, green time, blue time, sitting in front of the lake and looking over it, doing yoga, working out, having Cecilia take you on a walk. And by the way, she has that puppy that came onto the property, came into Socrates' garden. Cutest little thing. Well, now it's her puppy. We still have one more wonderful dog. Wonderful. I believe it's the father of that puppy. Anyhow, we took it in, and because it's going to die out on the road, either from heat or from a car. And it's still there. So if you want one of the most loving creatures ever, free, you'll call and let Luann know, because it needs a home. In any case, those are some of the things you can expect. Great conversations. It's silent, except for the workshops. We eat in silence. And positive energy galore. So one of the most beautiful, pristine environments in America. So I now see that Luann woke up from her nap. Hi, Luann. Is she there?
Did not wake up from a nap.
You did. You were sleeping.
Well, I wish.
You have low blood sugar.
How could anyone sleep through your show, Gary? Now, come on. That's just an impossibility. Just a physical impossibility. So, yes, I am interviewing for the next retreat. We are actually going to be having our drum circles again, which is very exciting. So each week we're going to have someone going doing drumming circles at least twice a week. And we have, you know, it's just a great place. We have cooking classes. We have art classes, yoga, meditation. Everybody gets personal health counseling with me. You're there every single day because everyone asks me. I'm telling you right now, Gary, anyone who calls me says, is Gary Null going to be there? He's going to be there in the flesh. Yes, indeed. And Gary lectures every single day. And my goodness, like Gary said, birds, the gardens, the lake. Oh, we have about 25 different species of butterflies. That we have flowers and roses all over the property. So to be able to just sit there and be with nature like this is very calming in the environment that we're in. And
Luann, we're also going to be doing workshops on how to sustain your life, where the best places are to live, the kind of careers you can get if you want to get out of the rat race that people are in and get away from the major cities, which in most cases they will probably want to do because of what's coming at us. And I'll be laying that over the next 2 weeks. But also hydroponics and mushroom growing. You know, we have David is going to be teaching some classes on mushrooms, and he'll be excited by that.
Oh, man.
He's in there working every day. He's tending to those sprouts and those microgreens. You got to see this place. It is just beautiful and filled, overflowing with every kind of green thing, dozens and dozens of plants. And you'll know how you can do that in your own home. So there's a lot that you can do. There's no wasted time, and every moment's a healing moment. So if you want to come, join us. Also, Luann has just told me last night, after that meeting we had with you, and by the way, I'm very happy with the fact that every single person in the control group showed up and is getting their blood workups done, both blood workups done, and starting the protocol. So that's not happened before. So we have a high level of awareness and consciousness, and people beginning to say, I'm going to stick with this because I'm the one who benefits from it. Good for you. But now we have a homesteading project in gardening, in freeze-drying of food, working at the farmer's market with John C., who's going to be making wonderful gourmet sugar-free and healthy desserts and other foods that the people at the local farmer's market, they love John C., and they always go and get whatever he has. But all that's done there. And so if you're interested in spending some time living in a pristine environment at no cost and benefiting and even earn money from the homesteading, you can give Luann a call. So that's going to be open for two people only. That's it. Two people, and that ends. We don't have room for anyone else in that at this time. So give Luann a call if either one of these, the retreat, which can change your life, and if you hear the people who leave there, it does change their life for the better. Unless you're a negative, toxic, blaming, whining, moaning, complaining person, then by all means, go someplace else. All right. Luann, give me your phone number, please.
Surely. It's 903-881-7008. That's 903-881-7008. Give me a call. I interview people all throughout the day.
Thank you. And thank all of you for listening. Eutrice Lead live today. She's back. I believe she's back. If Dylan tells me, or Kyle, she's back live, we're waiting to hear from her. And because she's relocated. She's got a home. It's been worked on. She is able to thrive there, and we're looking forward to what she has to say today. Now over to you, Therese Lead. Have a nice day, everyone.